Welcome back to another week of Behind the Lens. I'm Debbie Elias, film critic, creator, and host of Behind the Lens, where we go behind the lens and below the line with those movers and shakers, the film and TV and streaming makers, the producers, directors, writers, actors, cinematographers, production designers, costume designers, film editors, sound editors, mixers, and designers, those VFX gurus, composers, stuntmen and women, and so many more. And you all know how much I love film, how much I love to talk, and how much I like to talk about film. So I love coming to you each Monday to give you a front row seat to the who, what, where, when, why, and how of movie making with these interviews. Now, as promised, this week is all about director David McKenzie and his new explosive film, Fuse. Directed by David and written by Ben Hopkins, Fuse boasts an amazing all-star cast. Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Theo James, Saffron Hawking, Gugu Mbatha-Raw, Elam Esos, and Sam Worthington. Executed with razor-sharp precision. Fuse, it's tightly coiled, high-wire heist thriller, and it unfolds like a cinematic shell game. It's constantly shifting perspective, redirecting attention, and daring audiences to keep up. It's built around the discovery of an unexploded World War II bomb in London. And the film uses that premise not just as a ticking clock, but as the perfect cover for a meticulously orchestrated bank heist. And as authorities race against time to contain the crisis, and not knowing about the bank heist, because they're so focused on the bomb diffusion, alliances blur, moral boundaries are crossed, and the film deftly propels audiences through a series of calculated twists and turns that deliver a wildly entertaining ride, as only David can do. And one of the real strong suits of Fuse is that the unexploded World War II ordnance is a very real thing. In Europe and the UK, there have been many instances over the years, especially in recent years with development and construction, where these bombs, unexploded bombs, have been discovered. Now, as a matter of fact, just 3 days before David and I spoke last week, an unexploded bomb was found in Europe. I think in France it was, but it happens. So right away, we are rooted in reality, truth, and authenticity with the first element of the story. So with the World War II bomb as a starting point, Fuse then layers in a bank heist. So we're watching two big events unfolding at the same time. But then you have to look at all the players. The military doing the fusing, led by Aaron Taylor-Johnson as the bomb expert. Law enforcement, led by a very strong chief inspector, played by Gugu Mbatha-Raw, and then our criminals, led by Theo James and Sam Worthington. Now, performances are beyond reproach, and the intensity that each of our main characters has is riveting. In addition to Mbatha-Raw, Johnson acts as Major Tranter, Theo James as Corrales, and Worthington as X. But not to be overlooked is the work from supporting players, Alexander Arnold, who I was unfamiliar with, and I have to look for other projects he's done because I think he's wonderful. Honor Swinton Byrne and Elham Esos. Now, the twists and turns and seeing these three main story elements play out is very much like watching a shell game. Now, I mentioned, you know, a cinematic shell game, but you may not be old enough to know what a shell game is, but for those of you that are, just what the whole idea is, you know, they hustle you on street corners, and it used to be a big thing at the, you know, early in the 1900s and the 1800s with a walnut shell and a pea. And just when you, as they're shuffling the shells around, and you're betting on where the pea is going to show up. And that's exactly what you do in this film. Just when you think you know which shell the pea is under, you discover it's not there. The hand is quicker than the eye, and so is David McKenzie and his editor, Matt Mayer. With Fuse, while you're trying to watch all the shells, you're not focusing on our young corporal, who finds it suspicious that the bomb is shiny where there should be 85 years of rust. And what about all the locals who are pressuring the police to let them back into their homes? And just who are these criminals pulling off the bank job? And why in hell are they leaving the gold bars? That was my big question. Fuse rises and falls on its editing, and David is working once again with editor Matt Mayer, who crafts a relentless rhythm that drives the film forward with near-surgical intensity. There are over 300 scenes packed into just over 90 minutes of the film. The editing is lean, jagged, deliberately disorienting in the best possible way, and tight. Cuts come just before you expect them, pushing the narrative forward while subtly denying the audience time to fully process what they've seen. And then there's the wonderful cinematography from the masterful Giles Knutchens, who reunites with David to deliver a masterclass in controlled realism. Tightly composed two shots and close-ups keeps audiences focused on the mechanics of the moment, the bomb disposal procedures, the vault breaches, tactical movements, while quietly obscuring the larger truth that's hiding in plain sight. And then there's the score, courtesy of Tony Dugan, who reteams with David for the fourth time, and delivering music that builds like a tightening coil, minimalist, rhythmic, relentless, pulsing beneath the action and amplifying tension. And just when you think tension is ratcheted up as high as it can go, David McKenzie zings us with a brilliant tonal shift and comedic release. It had me laughing after being on the edge of my seat. Now, I've said this before, it's always a joy to speak with David. I love chatting with him. I love his work. I love his approach to filmmaking and storytelling. And, you know, he teased me a few months ago about Fuse when we were discussing Relay, which you've all heard here on the show. Everything he baited me with was an understatement once I saw Fuse. So get ready, sit back, and take a listen as David McKenzie and I discuss Fuse, from the original story and its visual interpretation to its clarity, believability, and structured narrative, which builds tension through Matt Mayer's editing. And yeah, and we talk about those 300 scenes. 300 scenes. It's mind-boggling. And the tight edit. And David also talks about working with cinematographer Giles Knutchens again, and that they're a magical pairing. They truly are. And their organic shooting style, the practical lighting, and the dynamic between the characters, particularly the chief superintendent and her team. And we get into Tony Dugan's score and specific performances, particularly from Theo James and Sam Worthington. So take a listen as director David McKenzie talks about the explosive Fuse. I'm so happy to chat with you again, David.
Not been very long since the last time, is it?
I know! But hey, even a month without talking to you is too long in my book. And I have to tell you, you teased me when we talked about Relay, you teased me about Fuse, and told me, just wait. Wow! I love Fuse. It is so good, David. So good.
Thank you. I'm delighted that's your response to it. As an American, you know, obviously a British subject, you think it's clear to an American audience?
It is extremely clear, and
great.
What works in your favor? Number one, it's an original story. Ben gave you an original story, and you have visually interpreted it in a very original and plausible way. Because every so often there's something in the news about a World War II ordnance that is found somewhere in the United Kingdom, somewhere in London.
Two days ago, a big area of Paris was evacuated for exactly that.
Yeah. So
I mean, so it's everywhere. In the 10 plus years I've been developing, because the film was originally my idea and I gave it to Ben to write, and in those 10 years I've seen so many reports of places that, you know, being evacuated. In the area of Soho where a lot of the film post-production stuff happens, that was evacuated about 10 years ago. It's every, you know, it happens so regularly, it's incredible. And that's something that I don't know whether an American audience fully appreciates, but all of those areas, like in, you know, it's in Berlin and you know, in Germany and France and Britain, where the Second World War was going on, you know, that these things happen all the time.
Yeah. So I love the script because of the believability, the plausibility of it.
Yeah.
But what you do here, you have this structured like it's a shell game. And we've got our eye on one shell. And then you're moving them. And you're moving them faster and faster. And then all of a sudden, we think that we open that shell up and the pea is underneath it. But oh my God, no. In the meantime, this is happening over here. So you do such a great job. And Matt Mayer, who did an excellent job on Relay, Matt once again builds that tension in the edit. And
absolutely, and I think the, I mean, in both of these films, the editing's getting more and more. It's just like, you know, it's slightly tenser. We're never kind of cutting in the obvious places. We're always slightly undercutting, and we're moving through the story fast. There's a jaggedness in the editing. Which is something that I you know, I've really sort of found and worked with Matt, and I really like that, because it, you know, it compresses the film, but B, it kind of makes it, you know, everything almost a jump cut, so it's pushing you forward all the time, and it's one of the things I'm most happy about is the film is, I think, I mean, it's called 91 minutes, but I think it's under 90 minutes. I mean, it's 90 minutes. If you exclude the credits,
mm-hmm.
And so it's a fast film. You know, there's a heck of a lot going on. I think there were 300 scenes in the film, and we just you know, bang bang bang, and that, there's something really exciting about being able to do that and not lose sense of the film, but actually create more of a sense of the film. You know what I mean? The editing is a big part of it.
The edit is so tight, and when the film ended, I couldn't believe it was over. But this is another thing that I love what you and Matt did, the way you end this film, and I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but damn, that was such a fun ending. I burst out laughing. After all this tension has built and built and built, and we get to one point and we think, okay, we got the bomb. They're working on the bomb. Tension's all gone. Everybody can go home. But then, oh no, you keep building, 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 because now there's more that's happening. And so by the time we get to the bitter end, having that comedic release, and that's exactly how it plays, is a comedic release.
Great. Well, that's what we wanted, really, was to sort of tell the audience in a way that you know, okay, it's been a ride, okay, it's been on the edge of your seat and all that, but it's also... it's also supposed to be entertaining. Permission to be entertained. Permission
yes.
to enjoy.
And
I think that's important for what we're trying to do. Even though, you know, there are high stakes and all those things, but it's also, you know, it's an entertaining film. That's the idea, I hope.
Oh, it absolutely is. But what I really love that you've done, and you and Giles together, I mean, the two of you are just magic as far as I'm concerned. With him shooting.
Oh, saying all the right things.
I mean, he, and you know I would tell you if it was bad, but what I love is you don't go wide. You've got a couple wides when we get into that third act, but almost everything, they are two shots. They're mid two shots or close-ups, not ECUs, but close-ups. So you really have us focused on the logistics and the mechanics of what's happening in terms of the bomb and in terms of the bank heist. And everything is done beautifully lit, open, even the bank heist underground. There is plenty of lighting there, some beautiful shadows and reflections that come off the metal of the safe deposit boxes. Nothing, we see what's happening with the bomb and what's happening with the heist. But what we aren't paying attention to as viewers, we're not paying attention to who all these players are. And this is where it gets really, really, really fascinating as to who each one of these players are that are involved in this. Be it military, be it the bank heist, be it third parties. I love the fact that we are paying attention to the mechanics of defusing a bomb, hopefully, and ripping off a bank.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting because I try and make it as organic as possible when we're shooting. And it's one of the great things about working with Giles is that he can be organic at the same time as being a great artist in terms of framing. And so we were able to kind of get things that feel pretty realist, but at the same time be pretty beautiful. And that's the sort of sweet spot for me. And so yes, you're right. So things happen in an organic way, and you're things are not necessarily being highlighted, but you're kind of absorbing them in something that feels real, and that's how you tell the story. I'm really glad he pointed out the bit about the light reflection from the flashlights kind of off the edges of the safety deposit box, because it just like there are some really lovely things with flashlights. It's a film that takes place entirely in the day. But there's a scene on the ground, and there's a scene in this vault. And so you do have this chance to have kind of darkness and stuff, and we were trying to use our practical lighting as much as possible to create the atmosphere there. So there's really it's really sort of flashlights and reflective flashlights and work lights that create that atmosphere in the dark areas. And Giles is really just great at that. And it was kind of really, it was not really lovely just to give Giles a chance to do some of his lighting, because a lot of it's daylight, a lot of it we're relying on.
Yeah. And that's one of
the sun's doing,
That's one of the beautiful things about the story, David, is that the heist and this bomb, everything's happening right under our noses in broad daylight.
Yeah.
So this is another reason we're paying attention to that, and we don't think anything is hidden. We think everything is here out in the open. Little do we know.
Well, interestingly, if you're watching it again, you might see one or two breadcrumbs. Just like in Relay, there are breadcrumbs throughout. But they're not. But part of what we had to do within the edit was to work out how much to give and when was too much. And it was very interesting trying to work that out, in terms of just some of those details. Because all of the actors are all sort of slightly showing their hand, but they're not showing their hand in an obvious way.
The one character, actually the two, that are straight up this entire film, Gugu Mbatha-Raw is fantastic as the chief superintendent. And I love Alexander Arnold as our corporal who's getting, well, I don't know about this. This bomb is shiny. It's from World War II. It shouldn't be shiny. No. Just some rust fell off. No, it's shiny. So we've got two people in this film that are totally on the up and up.
Yeah.
And that
it's very interesting.
And that just adds more suspicion as to who the heck is everybody else? And what are they doing?
Yeah, it's amazing. Cause, I mean, I love working with Gugu and what she had to do. Basically, it's kind of almost the backbone of the film is that police operations room. We actually had to shoot that first, so we hadn't done all the other stuff. So we were throwing her into the deep end. But we did a lot of research about those operation rooms and the dynamics of that and how on a busy day, you hardly even get a bathroom break. You know what I mean? You're just constantly at it. And she was really brilliant and really really focused and researched in terms of what that kind of high up in the police force person would do in that situation. And Alexander Arnold was brilliant. Just trying to be straight with Aaron's character is kind of almost pushing him down. I don't want to listen to to what your constraints theories are, and all, and you don't really know why, and you try, you know, and I thought Alex was a really, really great discovery for me, you know, in terms of the casting, and thought he really took every opportunity he possibly could to do something amazing with a character who's sort of a little bit nerdy, a little bit kind, yep, of like, you know, and he just nailed it. So I'm really glad he pointed out that, you know.
Oh,
yeah, Gugu's, you know, a major sort of part of the film, really. Her, you know, and she's always one step behind, though, and that's that, you know, because these guys have planned it quite well. There's, you know, that those guys are never quite able to catch up, just because it's happening in real time.
Yeah, that works so well. The fact that this really is essentially unfolding in real time for us, and that's part of what keeps it so propulsive and moving forward. And we are right there in this, especially as we start watching. We have our military led by Aaron's character of Major Tranter. We've got the cops led by Chief Superintendent. And I love the fact you've got a woman as the Chief Superintendent, and her right hand is also a woman.
Yeah.
So
she was great as well. Honor Swindon Byrne was fantastic. You know, the very, you know, really kind of held it together, and there's an awful lot of information that character has to kind of pass on, and, you know, things coming in and out, and I love their dynamic, and it was, you know, as I said, it was like pretty much, it was the first 3 or 4 days shooting, so it was like, this is, you know, I was asked in the previous interview, when do you know when the film's coming together, and it was like, it's usually the first 2 or 3 days, and so this is when it was happening, and that dynamic between Honor and Gugu was really very important part of it.
And of course, as we all know, the women are going to put puzzle pieces together faster than most of the guys are. So, you
sure.
So, it's another reason to keep your eye on those two characters in the film, because in many respects, women are suspicious. They don't trust men, and the pieces of the puzzle aren't adding up, and they're going to dig in even deeper. So those two are fantastic. But then when we look at your criminals, Theo James just knocks it out of the park as Corrales. He is...
I love working with Theo. I've never worked with him before, but I'd love to work with him again. He just took it and kind of gave it a physicality, and he's got, you know, he's got a kind of roguish personality that,
yeah,
you know, that was really, really, you know, just kind of made him a kind of enjoyable, you know, bad guy, you know, I really loved the opportunities that Theo took with the character. It was fantastic.
And then, but then you have him essentially paired up during the heist with Sam Worthington, and their performances are so good, along with the other minions in the crew. I'm especially fond of the one who decides he wants to take gold bars and he wants to pocket some of this stuff for himself.
Yeah, no, Bill, he's great. He was great. But what's really interesting about those guys is that on the page they were written as, you know, X, Y, and Z, you know, they were very underwritten, because they're kind of, you know, guys robbing a bank, you know, and so. But as soon as you get access to kind of inhabit those things, they find their own dynamics, and they build their characters up. And they became, they were really knocking down walls and things like that. They were getting sweaty and blisters on their hands and all that. And they kind of connected as a group, and finding that group dynamic as we were developing it was one of the kind of great pleasures of it. And
yeah.
Sam and Theo had this kind of interesting tension, you know, that Sam was like the sort of head of the operation, and Theo was like the brains behind the operation, you know, and sort of always this sense of like, oh, I don't trust you, and I don't trust you, and they were kind of, you know, and that was something that Sam really picked up on and brought out. And I think it really makes that dynamic exciting.
It's wonderful, and I know I'm getting a nasty text message that wants us to wrap, but before I do, I have to ask you about music and what Tony Dugan brought to the score. Because I think this is one of the best scores you've had in your films.
That's amazing. Well, this is the fourth one I've done with Tony, you know, it keeps on being more interesting. The idea of this score, it was all based on me when I was shooting the film. I was trying to sort of have an idea of what the music might be. And I was listening to Terry Riley's kind of minimal composition in C quite a lot, and the way it builds and builds and builds. So we, the plan of this was that all the music was all in C, all 120 beats a minute. And we had a number of guest musicians in who came in, Warren Ellis and you know, David Paco, and great, you know, great. And they go, and you go, okay, it's in C, 120. Oh, it means I don't have to think about the chord change or anything. And they just kind of get on and play. And what Tony's constructed with that, and the way it kind of rides attention and builds, is really, you know, amazing. And also the one thing is that a lot of the shape of it came from one session that Tony and I did together in January last year in Glasgow, where we had various pads and we just that were all lined up and I went through and just kind of pushed buttons on this thing to create kind of bass sounds and all this and the shape of that whole of the whole score is sort of based on that one sort of 3-hour session. Tony was on board making kind of abstract sound. In fact, it was a very, very rough demo, but it just came from just watching the film together. I love what Tony does, and you know, it's a really great collaboration between us. I listened to the soundtrack of Outlaw King on the plane coming over here, and for the first time for years, and I was going, wow, it's amazing. Really, you know, so yeah, exciting stuff.
Well, you have the best collaborations, David. And as we have to say goodbye, I just have to say the footage in Istanbul is beautiful. The footage in Turkey, the desert footage, the marketplace, it's all absolutely beautiful. Giles did a gorgeous job, especially with the sand.
I've just come from Istanbul, which is really interesting. So I was there for a film festival, and it was really great to come back there again, and, you know, because we just had one day shooting there at the end of the thing, so it was all a blur of work, you know, but it was really great. It's an incredible city.
Oh, David, I can't thank you enough. Another brilliant job. So well done.
You're saying all the right things, Debbie. It's been lovely talking to you. I hope I've said enough for you to kind of get what you need out of it, but... yeah, no, you've been incredibly kind about the film, and I really appreciate you and your eye for detail in terms of everything. It's like I don't know how you remember all these things, you know, in the middle of watching the film. It's incredible. So,
well,
thank you.
I can't wait for the next one, and hopefully we'll chat again about that.
I hope so too, Debbie. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, David. Bye-bye.
Okay, have a great day. Cheers.
You too. And that was David McKenzie talking about Fuse, which you can see in theaters right now. Now, I'm cutting the show a bit short today due to some unexpected events that happened over the weekend, but I wanted to get David's interview out there for you with today's show. So check out Fuse in theaters. And for my reviews to Fuse and other films, as well as interview features with David and others, just go to BehindTheLensOnline.net. Plenty of new stuff for you that's already out with more ready for me to pop out and publish. And don't miss next and all those potential Emmy consideration interviews. Got several of those already under the belt. I've got two more scheduled next week. Two more pending after that. But holding them until we get closer to Emmy voting time for nominations, which I believe it's June 11th. So I'll be popping out all of the Emmy consideration interviews probably around June 1st, maybe, or just slightly before, around Memorial Day weekend. So don't worry, you're gonna hear them. And it's very fun because I talked to cinematographer Mark Schwarzbard again. I spoke with him about The Lowdown, and then I spoke with him about Chad Powers. Totally different series, totally different tones, and some different approaches from Mark for both. And I can't wait for you to hear my interviews with him, especially when you compare the two series side by side. But make sure you join me next week, because next week's show Renny Harlin is back talking deep water. And maybe I'll even have some tidbits for you from the TCM Film Festival red carpet. For those of you in LA, a reminder, tickets are still available for some of the films screening at TCM this week. TCM Film Fest starts Thursday, April 30th, runs through Sunday, May 3rd in Hollywood at the TCL Chinese, the Chinese 6 Complex upstairs, the Egyptian Theater, and the legendary Hollywood Roosevelt. And the opening night gala is Robert Redford and Jane Fonda in Barefoot in the Park, and Jane Fonda will be in attendance saluting Robert Redford. So she's supposed to be on the red carpet, too. So I'm hoping I can grab some time with Jane on the red carpet. We'll see come Thursday. So until next week, I'm Debbie Elias. This is Behind the Lens.